What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Today, there will be a national day of solidarity across the country, and the Bay is going to show up and show out. We're joined this morning by George Galvis, co-founder and executive director of Communities United for Restorative Youth Justice, or COURAGE. Before we go to you, George, I want to play this clip from Minneapolis. Roll that tape, Rod.
You know what? I don't think this cold weather is going to stop us from doing what we believe and what we think is right.
Doing anything doesn't help with, you know, the situation. Everybody's scared. So we need to speak out.
Tessa, Minneapolis, and voices from protesters. We are joined by George Galvis, co-founder and executive director of Communities United for Restorative Youth Justice, or COURAGE. George, I want to start actually with a different take with you this morning. And that is, it's actually based on how you designed the flyer for tonight's action, which we'll get into later, and the way that I've heard you talk about Minnesota. Can you talk about who are the Indigenous people of Minnesota?
Yeah, so the Indigenous name, the state, what we pronounce as Minnesota is Mini, Shota, Makoche, right? And it's the land where the sky and the water meet. Right. And the people whose homelands are occupied are the people of the Ojibwe nations, you know, different Anishinaabe nations, Red Lake, Leech Lake, White Earth, as well as Dakota relatives who are part of the Ocheta Chicawin, you know, and, you know, the same folks who were, you know, impacted there at Standing Rock, you know, by the Black Snake and the construction of the oil pipeline.
Where we both were. Yeah. We're hearing a lot, and the reason why I want to go there is we're hearing a lot of general responses, and it's good, right, in terms of people resisting and demanding that ICE out. And I actually think that one of the beautiful things about what's happening in Minnesota is the different forms of resistance, right? They are really doing all roads in without the infighting that we have here about who's doing it right. Folks are sort of just letting people do what they do, right, because it's that time. And I hope the Bay is taking notes. Yes. That said, that's a different interview, which I have no doubt we will get to in the coming weeks and months as this nightmare travels here. I'm wondering, you may not be, I mean, I'm guessing you're tapped in because that's you, but I, if not, that's cool. But I'm interested in what does the Indigenous Front of Resistance in Minneapolis, Minnesota look like specifically and beyond ICE get out, are there additional demands?
Yeah, so there's a Native American corridor right there in Minneapolis, you know, and we should probably also just kind of say, like, really, there's just a huge Indigenous presence, you know, in the Twin Cities and throughout Minnesota, right? You know, it's been groups like our sibling organizations from the Indigenous Protectors Movement who have been on the front lines, like Many Shields, like the Indian Collective. And they've been staging and doing mutual aid right there out of the Powwow Grounds coffee shop, you know, which is an Indigenous-owned social enterprise. They've been doing art builds at the American Indian Cultural Center right there, you know, at the community center in Minneapolis. So First Nations have been on the front lines. They were targeted in their home state, in their own traditional homelands. Initially, I think there was sort of this idea that, well, you know, all brown people look alike, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, many of the Mesoamerican folks who are migrant Indigenous who are being targeted are Indigenous people. And, you know, they just can't make a distinction between people who are enrolled tribal citizens of different federally recognized nations that are in the context of what is now referred to as the state of Minnesota, or versus, you know, somebody who is an Indigenous person that migrated from any part of the Mesoamerican region or South America, right? And so what's become abundantly clear is that, you know, and we've known this, Kat, me and you've been talking about this, you know what I'm saying? Like ICE, and, you know, and before, you know, like I've been guilty of this Kat, I know we all have. We've referred to them as kind of Gestapo, as Nazis, as, you know, we've referred to, you know, Trump is kind of like modern day Hitler. But, you know, before the U.S. starts looking at other people's history to kind of equate what ICE is, I think we need to remember our own history. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I do.
Hitler was inspired by the United States and its treatment of who? African people, enslaved Africans, and indigenous people, and the Holocaust here in the U.S. There was an African Holocaust, there was an indigenous Holocaust, you know what I'm saying? And those are things that tend to be sort of erased, right? And so if we look at every modern day atrocity, they've been inspired by the United States and how they treat us. So, you know, I think a lot of people are compelled to action right now. And I think that this is another one of those important moments similar to 2020. You know what I mean? Like, I think a little bit even about, you know, me and you, Kat, like in summer of 2020, before there was even a vaccine, we're being told to shelter in place to, you know, maintain, to do this social distancing. There wasn't a vaccine yet for COVID. We know that COVID was killing people, but we also knew that police were killing people, right? And it was both of our children who were out on the streets in a youth march in the summer of 2020, right? Who were tear gassed by the Alameda County Sheriff. You know, they were out there, the young people were inspired, they were unafraid, they were marching peacefully, they were marching powerfully, and the sheriff decided to put out a curfew preemptively without even notifying anybody, right? And I know you know all this, but I'm sharing it for the audience. And they shot, you know, my daughter had rubber bullet pellets, bruises all over her body. They shot her with rubber bullets. They were tear gassed. They were arrested and detained. And I remember both of us as parents were like worried about our babies who were out there on the streets. And so within 24 hours after that, you know, I, speaking for myself, like I was sheltering in place. I was kind of doing what they told me to do. I was on the sofa watching the news, feeling helpless, like, God, man, what's going on? You know, but fear is the enemy. That's the whole point. You know, that is the point. The fear, the dehumanization, the terrorism is the point. But as parents, in defense of our babies, we were like, hell no. And within 24 hours, you know, we had the F your curfew action, which was one of my favorite actions of all of 2020. You know what I'm saying? We had a block party right there. We was doing the electric slide right on their curfew where they told us we couldn't be. You know what I'm saying? And what happened 24 hours after that? They lifted the curfew. The power of the people. The power of the people. And that's kind of, I think, again, we're being tested in this moment. They're out there, like, and you can only imagine if they're out there murdering white people on camera. Can you imagine what they're doing to the people behind the walls in the ICE detention centers? Black and indigenous migrants?
I need to get an update on Georgia. I've been getting here and there for folks that I'm hoping we're going to cover it this week, but I literally just had this conversation the other night at a Liberate Our Elders event. Georgia, yesterday, what was coming through is they, you know, which is under this massive storm, it's freezing. No food, no heat, no med calls, no staff inside, nothing. They're just being left to rot away inside that concentration camp. I'm glad that you brought that up. You were first talking about the rally, and I started getting mad, right? For those that see this on YouTube, I was in my face just started to heart, and I can't explain as a parent. I mean, I don't have to you, but for folks whose babies ain't in this thing, what it is like when your children are targeted and attacked by the state for doing nothing but being on the streets. But then, yes, the F Your Curfew March was one of my favorite moments. 8,000 people came out. And I didn't need to say people because you said, you know, it was in the height of COVID. We did. We did socially distance. We did mask. We had all of the PPE to get protective. We had the hands. We had all of that. And they did. They didn't want to repeat of 2015. Remember, that's the first time we shut down their curfew. There was something else that you said I think is really important. Like, we had you on following the murder of Renee Good, a white woman. Now they done murdered a white man, Mr. Alex Freddy. And now even the white men are mad, right? Somebody asked online, somebody famous, was like, what's it going to take for the white men to get mad? Well, The Republicans are mad. Even the NRA is mad. When Philando Castile was murdered, a legal gun owner who told the cop he had a gun, one of the community asks or demands, we don't ask usually, was that the NRA say something. Well, where you at? Right? He legal gunner did what he was supposed to do when he was murdered. Silence. But they mad now. Talk about holding the outrage and sadness, of course, for the murders of Ms. Good and Mr. Pretty, while at the same time holding the rage at the hypocrisy of white response to white death and white silence of black and brown death. And real fast, because I done seen some of my white friends and white folks getting their feelings about, I did, I was out there with Breonna Taylor. Yes, we know. Thank you. We're not talking to you. We're talking about your cousins, your newly incensed cousins, who, by the way, is finna go back inside as soon as ICE dip out of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I'd bet money on it.
Yeah, well, we've seen this. We know this script already, right? So, you know, rise in power, much love, respect, prayers, energy to Alex Pretty, to Renee Good, to the families of them. But let's also lift up a black man named Keith Porter.
Thank you.
A Cambodian named Parari La. You know, the five Latinos or Mesoamerican indigenous folks that were kidnapped and murdered, right? Heber Sanchez Dominguez, Victor Manuel Diaz, Luis Beltran Yanez Cruz, Luis Gustavo Nunez Caceres, and Gerardo Lunas Campos, right? Why don't we know their names? You know what I'm saying? Why don't we know their names? So that in itself illustrates that even in our movements, even with the very best intentions, we can unknowingly or unintentionally sometimes reproduce systems of oppression in an anti-oppression struggle, right? Even in our movements, we struggle with white supremacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at this point, ICE is on pace to kill more than 100 people in this just this year. So when we hear these sorry excuses for elected officials, you know what I mean? Which, you know, I guess it just goes with territories. I'm never impressed or ever, you know, I never have any real confidence in any elected official. But when we see all this sort of symbolic, you know, allyship, you know, this posturing, right? This performative allyship, you know what I'm saying? And then they say, well, they just need more training. And they still continue to vote to increase the budget of what is now the most well-funded military branch in the United States and probably one of the very best. If you just took ICE's budget alone and isolated it from the rest of the military, it's one of the best funded militaries in the entire world at this point.
Yeah.
And to tell us that, well, they just need more training or they just need cameras. We just need to enforce some, we just need to create some policies. Well, we have a constitution that's supposed to be unbreakable and that ain't being adhered to. There's nothing legal about this. It is nonsensical. And it makes it, you know, you're talking about like feeling the, you know, the muscles in your face and your jawbone tense up. When we were talking about, you know, that night where our babies were out and they were arrested and abused by the sheriff. Well, that's how I feel too right now in this moment when I hear these politics just try to kind of do this performative stuff and sweep it almost damn near under the rug and enable this. Like we're pissed off at the corporate enablers, and we're going to be targeting some of these fools like Target stores, Chipotle, Home Depot. You know, there's many, right? There's a Chick-fil-A right there in Emeryville, y'all. You know,
listen.
They all concentrated in Emeryville. Emeryville's a corporate town and city, y'all. Right next to Oakland. They basically West Oakland, but they're trying to be their own little, you know, just the way Piedmont is technically Oakland, you know what I mean? Oakland Hills, but they separated themselves to just be this little corporate city, you know what I'm saying? Big box retail. I'm sorry, you getting ready to say something, sis?
No, it's good. I was just going to build on what you were talking about, and now, like, I done lost the thread, but I'm going to go to where I was going to go anyway, and that is, elected officials, appointed officials too, right? Elected and appointed officials.
Yes.
That are condemning ICE, and particularly I'm talking about police chiefs and police sheriffs. We saw in Philadelphia Sheriff Rochelle Bilal talking about ICE agents being made up fake wannabe law enforcement. This is not how law enforcement acts. Law enforcement would never behave this way. I wish I had her. I want to send her a text with the picture of the United States dropping the bomb on the MOVE compound, the MOVE neighborhood, the MOVE family in Philadelphia. This idea that the police are going to protect us from ICE, that the police are going to protect us from the police. ICE is the, I'm saying that in what I'm saying tonight. You can't spell, I stole it from somebody, I don't know who, so I'm sorry, but you can't spell police without ICE.
That's right, that's right. And we've seen that the playbook is identical. The gaslighting is identical. You know what I mean? You know, they're trying to weaponize the fact that the brother had a legal permit to carry a firearm, but all he was doing was filming with his phone at the time and trying to, his last words were asking, were trying to basically help and use his body to shield a woman who was being abused by these, you know, by these terrorists, by these state-sanctioned domestic terrorists, and asking her if she was okay right before he was shot. Then we've seen this playbook before. You know what I mean? And I think the fundamental difference, as we kind of pointed out, is that they're not black and brown folks who are being executed. And so, you know, if white privilege is this frail in this moment, you know, and I've been wondering and thinking about this, and I don't know, I've been wondering, like, I guess maybe because there's all these white supremacists who've been recruited, the Proud Boys who are basically in ICE uniforms. I mean, you know, I put it like this. I'm proud to say I've hated the Klan so damn long. I hated them when they were called, you know, I hated the ICE. I said Klan. I hated ICE back when they were known as the KKK. You know what I'm saying? Right. That's how long I've hated ICE, when they were known as the Ku Klux Klan, right? So, you know, what I'm struggling with, though, is the dehumanization of our people has been ignored, and people still in our movements, well-intentioned, good white folks, still think that this is just an ICE thing. This is just a Trump thing. And we know that this conduct and this behavior has been happening on a micro level and hyper-local ways all across the country systematically. You know what I mean? And this is what we've experienced every time we say his name, every time we say her name. You know what I'm saying? And it's been kind of ignored. It's been, you know, it's been swept under the rug. And this isn't about, you know, this isn't partisan politics. And I guess I get enraged and I get resentful when I see the Dems almost see this as an opportunity to just try to mobilize voters in their favor for the midterm elections. If that's the solution, then that's not my fight. That ain't my fight.
Except for what you said at King Day. You said when it comes to elections, you just vote
I
for
do,
the person
I do,
you feel
I
like
do vote. I do vote. I do vote because I got too many of my folks who say, you know, I mean, bless their hearts, but they too woke to vote. And it's because they understand, and the people who are of conscience, who are deeply politicized and whatnot, but they also are just jaded with the, you know, what voting is, and just don't want to give it. And so that's why I'm like, look, we got to stop thinking about voting as an endorsement of a candidate. We have to look at it as we choosing which fool we want to fight. And I didn't say that politely. It's which mofo we want to fight.
That is what you
fight, this one or that one. But either way, I know we finna fight.
Along with, I'm going to repeat what the other thing you said, but I've giggled about
it. I'll say it.
You go ahead. You repeat yourself.
I mean, part of the playbook. Part of the playbook that we know of law enforcement that we see ICE mirroring is if they just would have complied.
Right.
They just would have complied, and compliance is the issue. Well, if they want to keep pushing that narrative, then we're going to say, well, you know, if Charlie Kirk just would have ducked. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
if Charlie Kirk just would have ducked. You saw how fragile and sensitive they were when anybody had anything. And many folks weren't even disrespecting or saying anything, because we actually... we stay above the fray. We actually have some morals. But what we did do is reflect back Charlie Kirk's own words back at them. And that ignited them enough. And you saw people get fired. You saw shows get canceled. You saw people get jailed for the audacity to even just project Charlie Kirk's own words back at his white supremacist MAGA cult.
Absolutely. There was no celebration, at least in my circles, the people that I rock with. Well, actually, that's not true. For the people that are closest to me, there was no celebration of the death of Charlie Kirk. And I think I said on my post, like, I don't put that kind of energy out there, because I believe energy comes back, and it comes back times 10.
Yes.
Right. And I don't, we're not going to get free, nor can we live by the violence, brutality, the lack of principle or moral barometers of our oppressors. They celebrate when we're murdered. They seek out to, and we didn't even write. They did that to him. That said you wasn't going to gaslight me.
Mm-hmm.
Into expressing deep mourning and tears. He wanted me dead, my baby dead, my family dead, you dead, my comrades dead. Look, what are we talking about right now? We getting off course. I want to talk about what's happening tonight. I think it's going to be massive.
I think it will be. I'm confident. And, you know, what I will say, too, before, you know, just one more narrative that's kind of been getting on my nerves is that this country's broken.
Ah, yes.
And it, to me, it's like, well, that's almost like saying make America great again type of BS. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Because and a lot of our allies are white allies. That's what they want. They want it to be back like it was when Obama was here.
So John Trudell, the American Indian Movement, famously said, America is not broken. It's finished with what it's pretending to be. You know what I mean? So they sold us this sort of false, you know, like when we were growing up in school, oh, these are your forefathers. You know, this is about, you know, freedom and equality for all. But we realized as black and brown folks, it wasn't for all. We recognized and saw the discrepancies. We saw the structural inequalities. We felt the racism. You know what I mean? We felt all of, you know, all of the hypocrisy of those statements and things they tried to feed us. I felt it and experienced, you know what I mean? Because I'll be honest, I kind of believe some of that hype. And I remember being 12 years old. And, you know, it's a very normal thing in middle school. You get into a fight after school. I happened to get into a fight after school. My neighborhood showed up for me. His neighborhood showed up for him. Fight was over. It was done. The very next day, we get pulled into the classroom and San Francisco police are there. This is at Herbert Hoover Middle School. Oh, you know, San Francisco Unified School District. And we start getting quizzed in a way that was very belligerent by this police officer, right? Because we, lips were tight. We ain't saying nothing. We don't know nothing. I ain't seen nothing. You know what I'm saying? And we're getting pressed real hard. And he's like, man, I'll punch that smile right off your face. That's what the officer told me. When he told me that, I laughed because I thought I had rights. And I got punched in the face by a police officer at the age of 12 in my school. And I looked at Mr. Arada, the vice principal, an old white guy. And Mr. Arada basically looked away, looked at. So that was, you know, that was one of my lessons in terms of showing that we get treated differently, Kat. You know what I mean? And I experienced it all, particularly hitting puberty. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, I fit the profile of every crime that ever got committed in my, you know what I mean? And, you know, and just, experience state violence. You know what I mean? I got beat up by the police multiple times as a young person. Multiple times as a young person.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to you as a grown up, and I'm sorry to your 12-year-old.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, so anyways, I just wanted to kind of point out, you know, that that's another narrative, another false narrative that we have to challenge, that is that somehow America is broken. This ain't, you know what I mean? Like, this is all, everything that we're experiencing right now has always been occurring. It just hasn't happened maybe at the same scale or with the same visibility. But, we haven't had the technology to be able to document as much. You know what I mean? And, you know, and nevertheless, they're still trying to tell us our eyes are deceiving us. What you seen, you didn't see. You know what I mean? It's so Orwellian, right? They're really trying to pull this Jedi mind trick. I guess it's more of what's the opposite of the Jedi's in this whole, you know, it's like some, you know, with the Darth Vader mind trick or whatever, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
Because they're the evil ones.
The Emperor, you know what I mean? But yeah, you know, a Sith. That's what they call them, the Siths, right? Trying to pull a Sith mind trick on us. You know what I'm saying?
George, what's happening tonight?
Man, we are standing in solidarity with all our relations, black, brown, and everybody who is standing up. And this was one of the things that's so inspiring right now. You know, I know it's going to rain a little bit tonight. It shouldn't be too bad, y'all. It shouldn't. But when I see our relatives in Minnesota out there in below freezing temperatures, in the snow, in the tens of thousands, standing up, and you know what? Fear, I said, and will continue to repeat, is the enemy. And that was the whole point of these executions, these live broadcasted public executions of white folks, was to scare people. And instead, it had the opposite effect. It galvanized the people. People came out bigger, stronger, more fierce as a result of it. We in the Bay should take inspiration from that. I mean, we always like to pop our collar. The Bay's a little different. You coming, you know, and as I've already said, especially town business, Emeryville ain't nothing but West Oakland. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
It ain't nothing but that, you know? We just don't get to benefit from the tax revenue that comes from all them corporate, you know, gangsters out there. And so we taking the fight to the corporate enablers of ICE. You know what I'm saying? So we're gonna gather right there at Shuchin Park. And Shuchin is, you know, very symbolically named as the traditional village for what Emeryville, Oakland, Berkeley, and, you know, many parts of the East Bay were named as the Ohlone village, whose homelands we're on, right? This stolen land, this unceded occupied territory, right? And we will be gathering there, and I have some different First Nations folks. We have one of our Ohlone relatives who's gonna open it up for us. We have some other California tribes who are representing. We have our intertribal, you know, singers and dancers. You know, I got an acapella all intertribal Native woman singing group there, you know what I mean? But we're gonna take this to those corporate enablers, man. You know what I mean? You know, we got a general strike that's been called by our relatives in Minnesota. And this Friday we're saying do not shop. We're saying do not go to school, do not go to work. We are demanding a general strike and asking for cooperation from everybody. If now is not the time, then when? When? You know what I mean? But we're getting ready for that. So we're going to hold a little strike line. We're going to talk to their customers today over at the Home Depot, at the Target. We're going to let them know Friday, general strike, no shopping, no going
to
school.
And tonight is at 6 o'clock, gather at the park, 4311 Hubbard Street.
That's right, 4311 Hubbard Street, Shuchin Park. It's spelled W-U-I-C-H-I-N. It's about a 7-minute walk, I want to say, from the park over to Target and Home Depot. And I'll just say there's a Chick-fil-A there too, y'all, just FYI. And then around the corner, you know, there's a Chipotle. And let's not forget that the CEO of Target, who's also, I believe, somehow the CEO of Chipotle, because that's how these billionaires, I guess, do it, gave $15,000 to the GoFundMe of the ice pig that murdered Renee Good. You know, that guy's a millionaire. All the right-wing fundraising that they did for that guy, he murdered Renee Good, public execution, and he's a millionaire. That they've raised over $1 million for him.
Wow. All right, y'all. That's tonight, 6 o'clock, 4311 Hubbard Street in West Oakland / Emeryville. I'll see you tonight, my G.
Thank I will you see you, my us. Sister from yeah. another mister. Love
yeah,
you.
My brother from another mother. I love you, too.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.